Untangle Your Story with Sherry Doyen. Go beyond survival and discover the magic of thriving from childhood abuse. Join us every week as our stories and wisdom helps you create strategies to move you beyond surviving to thriving. You were meant to live a life worth living. And now, your host, Sherry Doyen.
Thanks for being with us today on Untangle Your Story. I'm your host, Sherry Doyen. 35 million kids in the U.S. are experiencing at least one or more of the four forms of abuse. That's half of our children in the United States. By sharing our stories and our wisdoms, little by little, we chip away at that taboo that surrounds our experiences. Today, I'm excited to have with us Laura Elvebach. Laura is an award-winning author and screenwriter. In her most recent series of books, Laura spotlights our youth and what drives them from their homes and into the streets. She dives deep into their psyche and their coping mechanisms, which in many ways mirrors Laura's journey. Welcome, Laura, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive deep with you today. I know in your research for your Nikki Alexander series, you explored the teen shelters and the street churches. Was there a common thread that ran through the kids' experiences that led them to that space of choosing to leave their nest?
Oh, I think so, yes. Lost Witness is actually the second book in the Nikki Alexander mystery series. The first book featuring Nikki is Less Dead, and that's what a serial killer once called the homeless, the runaways, and the throwaways. And Nikki's an ex-cop who, while on duty, was forced to kill a teenager. She quit to become a counselor for a teen shelter to save and protect teens. And her ex-partner, homicide detective, goes to her whenever a case involves a street teen. For my books, I researched Covenant House, which is a shelter for runaway teens. And I think there's one in almost every city. In Houston, they also have a street church that meets in the parking lot once a week in the evening. And there's a large table set out with food and drink. Music blares from a boombox. And there's a preacher who preaches a church out in the open for the homeless. And he meets with the teens, gives a prayer, says a few words. Yeah. And everybody, they introduced me, and everybody had a story. And when they learned I was writing a book about them, they were just really eager to unload.
So tell me a little bit about that. Like, you know, what was that, you know, was there a culminating point in with the kids? Was there a common thread that pushed them out of their homes? Was it abuse? Was it, you know?
Yes. I had a chance to talk with the kids and the counselors. And most of these kids are running away from abuse, whether physical, sexual, or emotional. One young man said his mother remarried and her new husband didn't want to deal with him and kicked him out. One girl claimed her mother hated her and her father abused her, and she wanted her boyfriend to stay on the street with her. And she was really angry when his parents talked him into returning home. He wasn't really ready for that. One boy was certain there was an undercover FBI agent among them spying on them.
Can you imagine, like, what it must be to actually, well, you can because you did it, right, to actually make that choice?
Yeah.
I think often, you know, growing up in that sort of situation, you know, we think about it, but to actually do it.
Oh, right. Yeah, a lot of these kids had substance abuse problems, and they couldn't get what they needed at home. The woman who took me to the street church was homeless off and on for many years, and her 19-year-old daughter was now on the street. And my friend wandered me with her for support because she was there trying to say goodbye to her 2-year-old granddaughter who was being fostered and now adopted because her birth mother chose drugs over her. It was heartbreaking. Yeah, but a lot of them wanted a better life for themselves. They wanted to get more educated so they could be self-sufficient. One young man was designing, building furniture in a friend's garage. You know, they wanted to be off the street because there's predators out there that, and they'll do anything to survive. You know, it's really needed a bed and food and counseling and safety.
Now, in walking through these stories with these kids, did that, you know, trigger insight into your experiences?
Oh, yes, yeah. I had similar feelings as a teenager. I felt distanced from my family and dreamed about getting away. My favorite dream was to go to Europe, study at the Sorbonne, get around on a motorcycle with a sidecar with my typewriter and type room and write for a living.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
Yeah, I didn't really connect with the popular kids, only the ones that were loners and outsiders like me.
Because you lost your mother at a very young age, if I remember correctly, is that right?
Yes, and I don't remember much about her except that I know she was kind and funny and beautiful. We lived in a Quonset hut in California when my father got out of the service. This was in the 1940s. Yeah. So when we moved in with my paternal grandparents, because my mother got breast cancer, it spread to her stomach, and the doctors sent her home to die. I was allowed to see her in the back bedroom, but don't remember much about those visits. I remember one Sunday, my grandfather took me to church, and usually it was both grandparents, but this Sunday was different, and I didn't want to go. I knew if I went, something terrible was going to happen, and sure enough, when I got back, they told me that my mother was dead. And then soon after that, my father left us, and I was only five, and I stayed with my grandparents. My grandfather was kind of strict and distant, but my grandmother sewed all my clothes, taught me to read and write, instilled in me with the love of reading, sent me to school.
Oh, I can feel the love in you for her.
Yeah.
That made me smile.
I had a friend across the street, and we were really close. She lost her mother and lived with her grandmother. When her father remarried, she refused to live with him. Then my father returned when I was eight and brought his new wife and my new mother, and I did have to live with them.
What was that like?
Well, it wasn't a happy marriage for him, and there was just a lot of fighting all the time. I didn't get along with my stepmother. My father was the type to hold in his feelings. My stepmother never held back. And my half-sister was born when I was 11, and I didn't bond with her either. She got the private schools and the schooling in Austria as an exchange student, all the riches I didn't get. And so that's probably why we were never close. I just didn't feel like I belonged in that family. Yeah, I felt sorry for my father, but he was trapped too.
Now, how old were you when your mother got sick?
She was sick for about a year, so it was about three or four, and I was five when she died.
Now, were you cognizant of what that meant at that age?
I know I used to have nightmares all the time at night, the kind where you're crawling across the street and a car's coming and you can't move, like you're in deep water. I was just very lonely. And
you felt so stuck, right?
Yeah.
So stuck. You know, we're not supposed to break that cord between mom and child, for sure.
Right.
You know,
mom
pours into that every second. Now, did you, when you were talking about... Gosh, I kind of lost it. Sorry. Let's move on. I had a good one. We'll come back. It'll come back around. So now, when you were processing your father's choices, how was that? What did that feel like?
Well, I didn't understand. He was distant and always fighting. He is the type that would just go away. Lose himself in work, and he wasn't happy in work either. When he was a musician, he played the violin, and he was happiest when we finally moved to San Francisco, and he opened up a music shop. But then they got divorced, and so
Do you ever remember seeing, my question came back around, did you ever remember seeing your mother? Like as a child, sensing her? You were so young.
I remember vaguely. I remember little stories like when we were living in the Quonset hut and I was playing with my baby doll, and I asked her, she was bad, what should I do? Should I spank her? She says, would you want to be spanked? No,
yeah.
don't spank your baby doll then.
Yeah. But do you remember like sensing her spirit after she passed? Like do you remember feeling her watching you? Or, you know, so often kids, like that spirit world is so, there's no lines, you know.
Yeah, I thought about her all the time, and I'd go back into the bedroom where she used to be lying down, and just kind of feel her there.
Yeah, did you smell her? Often people smell them.
Yeah, that smell is still there.
You know, it's really... My cousin's little girl lost her father when she was an infant, and she would sit and have conversations, you know, before bed every, and you know, her mother would say, you know, who are you talking to? And she said, I'm talking to my daddy. Now she was like, you know, three or something. And she's like, but your daddy's not here. He's in the other room. And she said, no, this is my other daddy. So in her
wow.
mind, you know. Yeah,
yeah,
she was having those experiences. And often, you know, I think we dismiss them, but, you know, I think our childlike selves have them, don't you?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wonder how different my life would have been if she was alive. Yeah, I just can't imagine.
Just a different road, right?
Yes, definitely.
Now, I know that in our earlier conversation, you had a lot of running in your life as well. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, now, did you ever actually leave home, or is it more?
I did. Yeah. I met my
first
husband.
Did you end up
husband.
On the streets as well?
Yes, sort of. I met my first husband, Mark. When I was 17, I was selling Christmas cards with Junior Achievement. And he was Jewish, 10 years older than me, and with a motorcycle. And it was just the opposite of my family, my friends, and everything. And I started seeing him, and my parents forbid me to see him, so I decided to run away. And he helped me. He let me stay with the gang leader of the Hell's Angels. They hid me away in the back room. And they finally told me I had to go back home because they didn't want to get in trouble for that.
I guess not.
So I came back home, because my parents wanted to send me to college, to this Lutheran college up in Washington. And I didn't really want to go, but I agreed. And then I found out that Mark was having a motorcycle race in Canada. I says, oh, good, then I will join them. So I ran away again, got on the bus, and I didn't quite make it to Canada. I finally came back. But by then, my parents said, packed up, and instead of going back home, they put me in the YMCA.
Okay.
So I was on my own, when you were a child
and you were like five, like what were the thoughts that ran through your head when your dad, you know, could he just not deal with everything that was going on? Like, how did you process that? Back to that question.
He really didn't. He loved my mother, my real mother, so much. And he just couldn't face anything, and that's when he left for San Francisco for 3 years, and even when he came back, he was he didn't get along with the new wife either, because the only reason And he told me this later, that the only reason he married her was so that I would have a new mother.
And, right. But that happens so often, right?
I didn't have a chance to even get to know her before all of a sudden she's my new mother. You know, and what is this stranger doing in my house? So we really, really didn't get along, and I was always doing rebellious things in school and doing just the opposite. But
So was there a defining incident in your childhood that, you know, pushed you to run, like, you know?
Probably the loss of my mother really hit me, and getting adjusted.
And it probably just kept hitting you in stages, right? Like, you know, every big incident, every, you know, big experience, you know.
Right. Now, my parents would go to their good friends for bridge parties, and the husband would come into the room I was watching TV or getting out of the way and want to fondle me. And I'm thinking, you know, what kind of marriage is this? What kind of...
Her husband.
Yes, that's hypocrisy. And I
how old were you then?
Way.
How old were you then?
About 11, 12.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, I thought
who was this again? Say that to me again. Who was it?
It was a family friend. One of the men that my father worked with. And but they played bridge all the time. And
did you share that with anyone? Did you tell? Or
No, I never did.
Was it a continuous thing? Was it a one-time thing? Was it?
Do
you mind talking about it? Is that okay?
It helped. It happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I finally said, I just want to stay home when you go over to their house. This was at their house too.
And they would allow you to stay home, so they truly didn't get it. They didn't know.
They didn't know. Mm-mm. No. And
now, how did that? Do you know? I mean, standing on the other side, can you see that pattern of, you know, how that's played into your life to date, like with your different husbands and.
Yes, yeah. I remember one incident, and actually I've never told anybody about this. When early 20s, when I was started work, I passed a movie theater, and the guy inside beckoned me to come in, and I thought he was going to show me something, but instead he raped me. And when I left, he let me go, and I never said a word about it to anybody.
You know, it's funny. It's like, you know, oftentimes we just kind of dismiss our experiences, right, as if they're not worthy or we're not worthy. I don't know. But, you know, I think that most often, I'm kind of taking my own personal survey, but most often, you know, when we have violations and disruptions as an adult, they're following us from our childhood, you know.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
And it's like we're leaving the back door open always, right? And
right. I had the same thing with my uncle. And I was like 20, and he kept saying, I can make you a model. I can do all this stuff for you. and he's saying this. We're in a motel room. And I thought, oh. Yeah, I can't trust anybody. Who can you trust?
Well, it does put you in that place, right, where you're just in flight. You know, you're
mm-hmm.
in flight. Most of us are in flight on the inside, and you actually took to flight, which, you know, is interesting
right.
that you put such action behind that.
I've been married 6 times, and I ran away each time. the first husband was the motorcycle racer, and then the second one was I was 20 and he was 50 when I met him, and he was in a wheelchair and met in a bar and moved in pretty quick. And it wasn't too long after that that we went down to Mexico for 6 months and then all of a sudden to New York and changed her name. And I finally found out that he'd been running from a hitman in the mob, his ex-brother-in-law, who was the
Syrian. Now, isn't that interesting? You know, I metaphysically, that's very interesting that, you know, you being a runner attracted a runner.
Yeah, right. And he had both casts on his legs, and he couldn't go back to the hospital. He had jumped off of a roof 3 stories to get away from these people. So he couldn't go back, and he soaked these casts off his feet. I rubbed his feet every night for 3 years until he could walk again without a limp. And
wow.
I seem to be attracted to people who need something.
somebody was always taking something. I mean, it's almost like that's why we were put here, right, to give of ourselves, because somebody's been taken since day one, it's almost, right?
Right.
Now, was there a defining moment where you were like, I stopped running?
Yeah, I stopped running when I left my 6th husband and decided I would never marry again because my children were more important, and they were the ones that being hurt by my choices, by my leaving their fathers, even though I felt their lives and mine would be safer without them. But why stay with someone who is going to make your life miserable? And why live with a cramped stomach all the time? Why stay with someone you know is going to hurt your children? I realized I couldn't trust my choice in men. And I've seen women driven literally mad by putting up with abuse. A former babysitter of mine turned out to be a battered wife who wasn't allowed to have friends, wasn't allowed to drive or leave the house without them. Then she started telling me about these trips at night to the starship where she was safe and found all the missing socks. I thought she was kidding. But then she told me that the captain was telling her to get rid of her children, and that's when I took her to the emergency room. I mean, sometimes you just have to run. Yeah, sometimes
well,
you're safe.
Right. So, you know, the moment when you hit the wall, I mean, was there kind of that crashing moment when you just looked around and were like, what am I doing? Like, why am I, you know... And, you know, it makes sense you wouldn't be trusting men at this point, you know, but was there what was that experience like when you just were like, what, you know?
Yeah, it's like...
You woke up.
Yeah, what are you doing to yourself? What are you doing to your children? Why are you starting over again from scratch? Because you leave everything behind when you run. You can't really pack up. and you're starting...
Now, when you were talking to the kids, tell me a little bit more about that. I'm intrigued about their stories, like, about, you know, that threat of why they would actually, like, leave, you know?
Yeah. Well, my 4th husband was Hawaiian, and I had my youngest daughter... with him. I had my oldest daughter with Johnny, with the one that was running. One of the reasons I was attracted, he was one of the top hardhead divers in the world. He'd been all over the world. He knew movie stars, and that's another thing that attracted me. But he's also the father of my oldest daughter. And when I... when I ran, of course, taking her, because just didn't feel safe and with her. And then I had this, my son in Philadelphia. When I met my when I left my fourth husband, it turns out that he was abusing my eldest daughter. He was physically abusing my son, and my our child, our little daughter, was only 6 months old. And then, and to protect them all.
So how did you address that with him?
I told him, "It's we have to leave because you're being hurt, and it's going to be a lot better." And it took a while. Those things.
How did you address it with your daughter? How old was she?
She was six. Well, she was 6 months when I left. And
oh, I thought you said he was abusing your daughter.
Oh, yeah, my oldest daughter. He was, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that he was until I was working for a psychiatrist at the time. And she came in, and she was about 8 or 9. And she wanted to talk to him alone. And she told him, and somehow he got her to tell me that he had come into her room. And I was shocked. Yeah.
What did you say to her?
I protected her. I told her it would never happen again. And she's been pretty messed up most of her life, actually. And my son... My
so
son
has
still
that,
lives with
has
me.
She has repetitive sexual
yeah.
things as well? Like, has that...
Yes. Yes, she's had bad relationships herself. My son...
Now that you've kind of recognized the cycle in your life, you know, how powerful would that be for you two to come together and break those cycles? You know, it's almost like, you know, we plant a tree, right, and all the limbs for our kids and everything, right? How cool that would be for you guys to come together and really put
oh,
an end to that cycle.
Yeah, we have. It's like us against the world. We're very, very close. We live close together. Well, my oldest daughter lives in Virginia right now, but she's going to come home. And it's always been us against her, against the world, really.
Now, does she have a relationship with your husband? Does she have a relationship with him at all? How was that addressed with him?
Oh, well, I'm not married anymore.
I realize when I ran away,
they never saw their father again. And she's asked me several times, "Well, what is he like?" And she's tried to find him. She's but my goodness, he would be 100 years old right now. But she's tried to find him.
Did she have any interaction after her experience with her abuser?
She hates him. Oh, she hates him with a passion.
Did she ever personally confront him with it?
No. When we left, he had a daughter and a son by previous marriage. And they didn't like him either. They came and visited. And, in fact, the daughter, both of them went to look for their half-sister, my youngest daughter. And they're very close now. But, and my youngest daughter met her father, but he was sort of, I think he's got dementia. He's very, at first he didn't even want to meet her. He didn't want, he didn't want anything to do with me, which was mutual. But the kids, even his own daughter does not have anything to do with him.
No. So at this point in your life, if, you know, you're standing back and you could be face to face with, you know, a teenage you, what would you say to her? Now, the real you. I'm not talking about another child. I'm saying what would you say to her?
I'd say don't rush into relationships when you're young. Take the time to go to Europe, study at the Sorbonne, travel with your typewriter, and you'll live your life. If you later you find the right man, make sure that you're loving him for the right reasons, not because you need him or he needs you, but because you both love and respect each other for the individuals you are. And more important, don't be a victim. Don't let yourself be a victim. There's healing. There's journaling.
So how did you find healing? Yeah, what was your strategies for healing?
Journaling and writing.
That was really powerful to me as well. And then I would read it out loud because it felt like, you know, to get the clarity on the page, number one, right? And then to say it out loud, it's coming back through your ear. And really powerful for gaining order for me.
Yes, yeah. It's very healing. I tried to write a letter to my children. I'd never showed it to them, but I just wanted to get it all down.
When you were writing about the kids, do you find yourself being woven into those characters?
Oh yeah, yeah. I have a lot of empathy for them, and it's funny because my children do too. They take in other kids that are runaways or that don't get along with their families,
I did that too, and I think that, you know, when you know what it feels like to be that alone,
mm-hmm.
you don't want anyone else to feel that.
Right, right.
Am I right? You just don't want anyone else to ever feel that.
Yeah, that's why I had the Nikki Alexander series, because she's my fighter. She's my champion for the young kids. She's going to make sure that she's going to save them. She's going to help them.
So what age group do they aim towards? Are they adult, young adult?
Well, they're adults, but teenagers love them too. I know when I...
Right. I'm sure that being able to identify with their existence on the page is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my kids, of course, have read them, love them.
We learn so much through storytelling. And, I told my story that way as well, you know, in that story form. And I think it kind of disarms the fighter in us, because I think when we're going through that stuff, we have that persona of, like, I don't need you. I don't need, you know, that kind of hard, like, I'm fine, you know, I don't need
right.
to hear you. But I think that it's, you know, that's kind of coming in the back door for them as well to be able to identify and find a commonality in their experiences, which kind of helps you not feel quite as alone.
Exactly. And you can address different issues through the fiction too, through the stories.
Right.
Like... like the first one, Less Dead, is about being abandoned by a parent. And a lost witness looks at the drug world and the families that cross borders. And I have a third one coming out in the end of the year that deals with pedophiles. And
we need to talk again. We need to talk again because that's my subject. Need to get you for sure when that one comes out. So make sure you reach out to me. That's awesome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where your books can be found, where our listeners can find you.
Okay, yes. Less Dead and Lost Witness are both available on Amazon and also in print and in ebook and also in audio through iTunes and Audible. And Lost Witness is also available at the bookstore of Focus on Women magazine. And that's going to be featured, I guess, later this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And A Matter of Revenge, the third one, comes out later this year with a Black Opal book. And I have a standalone that is going to be released next month on July 18th called The Flawed Dance, about a woman that's run away from a man who's running away, and she becomes a go-go dancer.
Being a writer when you can, like, use your experiences as that backdrop and really dive into, you know.
Right. And then, of course, I had to fictionalize it greatly. Otherwise, there wouldn't be the kind of ending I wanted. But
Well, you know, and it also helped me to, you know, in putting it over there, be more objective about the experience.
Yes, because I tried to write it before and couldn't. And
I couldn't either because I can't get so tangled up in everybody's truth, right?
Right, and it's so close. You probably noticed it yourself, that writing it when it's so close, it is too raw. You need some distance.
And, you know, I think that both of us, and, you know, I would encourage you to give that young girl a deep bow, you know, for being such a scrapper and being so cool and, you know, getting through that and bringing you to this place you are today, right?
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being with us today, Laura. It was a pleasure. We'll definitely have to get you back here with your last book as well.
It's been a pleasure. And my website is under lauraelverbeck.com. I also have a couple of blogs. And I have a 60s love blog.
Oh, fabulous. Well, we'll catch up. We could keep talking all day, but move right along at this point. We all have the ability to begin to write a new chapter and create a life that's more than merely surviving. I believe it's not only a choice, but our responsibility collectively to heal. The world needs us awake and healthy. We're the world's quiet warriors. And I'd urge you to follow me on Facebook.com, Sherry Doyen, Coach Sherry Doyen, Twitter.com, Sherry Doyen, and my website, SherryDoyen.com. And please tune in each and every Thursday at 5 Central Time to BlogTalkRadio.com, Untangle Your Story. And thank you. Thanks for being with us.
You have been listening to Untangle Your Story. Go beyond survival and discover the magic of thriving from childhood abuse with Sherry Doyen. All shows are archived on Blog Talk Radio and SherryDoyen.com.